This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
This is Eben Fowler again from Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins, who's on the road at the moment. And some of you may not believe that it is me. It's certain, you certainly know it's not Tony Perkins. Yes, I am at the tail end of a cold, so God gave me another octave deeper in voice today. So, I was going to play some Barry White music for a bumper, but they didn't have it handy. So, at any rate, doing fine here, and we're glad that you are along for the ride this afternoon on Washington Watch. Well, first up on today's broadcast, Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio has come up with 9 lies Americans were told about Obamacare, and we'll go through them with the congressman in just a moment. Then we'll get a live report from CPAC. World Magazine's Evan Wilt will join us with an update. That's been an exciting event. And then rounding out the bottom of the hour and the rest of the hour, you might be appalled to learn Teen Vogue magazine's aggressive assault on its young readers is afoot. And in just the first 2 months of the year, the magazine has published more than 60 pro-abortion articles. Jeannie Nigro of Jeannie Nigro Ministries and author of Unshaken, Standing Strong in Uncertain Times will be here to sort through the agenda and what parents can do to head off the left's attempt to capture the minds of our youth. Well, like your plan, you can keep your plan. Like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. You remember hearing that a few years back from the mouth of President Obama? Well, in a recent interview with Breitbart News, Ohio Republican Representative Jim Jordan shared what he called the 9 lies Americans were told about Obamacare, and those are just the first 2. Here to talk with us about those lies is Representative Jordan himself. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Evan. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. I don't know if you heard earlier, I'm on the tail end of a cold, so kind of in a little bit deeper register than usual. I wish I could keep it, but you know how that goes. It's going around. It's going around.
That time of year.
Well, before we get into this topic, just briefly, I'd like to hear your thoughts, and I didn't talk to you about this before, but your thoughts about some of these town halls that are going on around the country, because it actually ties into the topic we're going to talk about today, which is the repeal and replacement of Obamacare. Have you been to any of those, or have you talked to any of your colleagues?
We had a couple hundred protesters at an event we had on Monday, and, tell everyone this is a democracy in action. You know, we have this wonderful thing in our great country, the greatest country ever, this thing called the First Amendment, and folks are allowed to go out and exercise it. You know, hopefully it's all done in a peaceful way, but I thought it was fine, and, I took their questions, and we talked for like 45 minutes on Monday, so just part of our great democracy in action. And but the truth is, we need to repeal Obamacare and replace it with a plan that empowers patients and doctors and families and not what we currently have, which is, you know, all the power in Washington.
Well, you heard me mention those first 2 lies, like your plan, you can keep your plan, like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And I believe President Obama uttered those promises many, many, many times. Before we get into those lies in detail and the others, can you give us a sense of why you think the Obamacare was, well, they called it the Affordable Care Act initially, why it was marketed that way and why it has turned out to be pretty much the opposite in every case?
Yeah, well, that's how they could sell it. You don't have to take my word for it. They intentionally tried to deceive the American people. Take Jonathan Gruber's word for it. Remember him? He was called the architect of Obamacare, and he was caught on tape saying, "Yeah, we misled the American people. We told them one thing that wasn't exactly true. We told them some other statements that weren't accurate." And then he got caught. We actually called him into Congress, and we held him in front of the Oversight Committee for a hearing. So, yeah, they did it so they could pass this legislation. And that's not the way it's supposed to operate. People in positions of influence and in positions in our government are supposed to be honest and straightforward with the American people, and they, of course, weren't.
Yeah, exactly. And I just want to talk to my producer, Brent. Brent, could you give me just a little bit more level coming back on Representative Jordan? So you say they were trying to hide this from the American people. You know, it was sold as something that was going to make make your life much, much better and your health care much, much better. But what was, what do you think was their original intent, if I may borrow
a
phrase?
Well, who knows? Who knows? What we do know is the name says Affordable Care Act, and we know it's been anything but. It's in fact been just the opposite. You know, some suggest that they wanted this thing to help lead to a single-payer system. I mean, I don't know. All I know is they marketed this thing under false statements. It's now the law. It's been a complete disaster, and it needs to go. And we need to get back to where we actually have an insurance market that can bring in lower cost insurance for middle class and working class families, which right now we don't have. And, we put forward a plan last week. I mean, we conservatives, sponsored on the House side is Congressman Mark Stanford, on the Senate side was Dr. Rand Paul, a plan that we think, we say repeal it, just like we did in 2015, the exact same legislation, and then a separate piece of legislation which would replace it, which would move us in a market direction and empower families.
You know, I'm going to borrow another phrase, and that phrase is fake news, and I'm sure you've heard mm-hmm. that quite a bit recently. And the thing is, you know, you can joke about that that particular depiction of the news that's coming out of many, many media outlets, but I'm finding that it's becoming very difficult to accurately determine what is going on. And I want to ask you specifically, because a lot of the news coverage about this issue of repeal and replace has essentially portrayed the Republican side as being confused and disorganized and not really having a plan that can replace Obamacare. What is really going on?
Well, some of that's not completely off base, because, you know, while we've had plans in the past and we've been clear about trying to repeal it, there's only been, as I said before, only one plan put forward this Congress that says repeal it in this fashion and replace it in this fashion. And that's the one the House Freedom Caucus put forward with Senator Paul that I just described. So we've heard concepts from our House leadership. But we've yet to see an actual bill text and actual, you know, words on paper and the actual legislation itself. So we're supposed to see that next week. My guess is it's going to be a plan with some problems and probably not do what our plan that the House Freedom Caucus put forward last week, what our plan is.
Well, let's face it, you know, this is not a simple fix. If it was... you know, the healthcare system would have been fixed a long time ago. You've got these issues like pre-existing conditions, and then, you know, people talk about the supposed benefit of having your kids on your insurance plan until they're 26 years old. That, you know, to me, that's really not as important, but it's something that my understanding is that any kind of replacement bill might try to retain. But of course, the pre-existing piece is very important to lots and lots of people out there. What are the best ideas out there that you've heard to take care of the pre-existing condition situation?
Yeah, bring back low-cost insurance. Bring back not cheaper, but less expensive insurance. And right now we don't have that. You're in the individual market. You're paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month as an individual, maybe $1,000 a month as a family, to get a $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 deductible plan, because Obamacare mandates every kind of, all these coverages have to be in every plan. It has all these regulations, all the taxes, all the mandates, all that in Obamacare, and it drives up the cost of insurance for everyone. So you have to get back to where the market can actually offer less expensive insurance that meets individual families' needs. So we do things like expand health savings accounts. We allow the purchase of insurance across state lines. We allow easier easier formation of association health plans, which gives purchasing power. We give a tax credit in the individual market for people who have to buy their insurance to get it outside of their work environment. We do all kinds of things that we think will lower costs. But the biggest thing is to repeal Obamacare and recognize the disaster it's been and all the false statements that people were told about this legislation in the first place, says get rid of it first and then replace it right away with something that does what I just described.
Yeah, and then you mentioned health savings accounts, HSAs.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things, maybe this is an issue that I have not heard really anybody bring up, and that is my understanding is that when an individual hits the age of 65, they can no longer contribute to a health savings account. And if that's correct, it doesn't make any sense to me, because if somebody's, and a lot of people are working past the age of 65 now, and to be able, and as you get older, your health care expenses typically get higher. Wouldn't it make sense to basically have no end point as to when you could contribute to your own health care savings?
We create so much freedom and flexibility in these health savings accounts. We allow it to be used to actually pay for your premiums once you start to build it up. We allow health savings accounts to be used to pay for wellness and healthy lifestyle things, like you could pay for your YMCA membership, those kind of things. We allow those kind of things under our plan because we want to incentivize healthy behavior. We want to, as I've said several times, get back to a market. We've forgotten in this country what a healthcare marketplace looks like, what a health market, what health insurance market looks like. Because every other industry, every other thing we shop for, we think about price. There's price transparency. You can compare price, and you can look at quality. Except when it comes to healthcare, because it's always a third party paying. So that's what we want to bring back into the health insurance and healthcare market, which we currently lack.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it would be if we got back to where we were, that would be an improvement over where we are. But of course, there are the things that need to be fixed.
Yeah. And where we were wasn't perfect, but Obamacare has made things worse. And again, we hear always from the left, oh, you got to be careful. If you repeal it, it's going to do this. And what about this? And what about? And I come back to, remember what you told us. You said, if you like your plan, keep your plan. You said, if you like your doctor, keep your doctor. Two false statements. One of those statements was given like outlandish statement of the year by PolitiFact when the president said it. The president said premiums would decline. The president said premiums would decline by $2,500 on average. We were told by the Democrats when they passed Obamacare that deductibles will go down. Remember, we were also told the website will work. The website is secure. I mean, come on. Remember the disaster in 2013 when they rolled this thing out. We were told emergency room visits would decline. They haven't. And we were told that the co-ops that the Affordable Care Act created were going to be just wonderful creations that were going to help with health insurance and insure more people. They created 23 of them. 18 of them have already went bankrupt. So those are the 9 false statements, absolutely false statements. The Democrats told us they were. It was confirmed that they were false when we've seen what's played out, but also by the architect of the legislation, Jonathan Gruber. And now the left says, "Oh, don't change Obamacare. It's so darn important. We've got to keep it." Are you kidding me? We've had three elections where it was one of the fundamental and central issues of those elections. We had to, as Republicans, we had better repeal this thing. And we had better replace it with a model that actually empowers people and doesn't keep all the control in Washington, D.C.
Well, you know, you mentioned the one lie, and that's the website would work. In the history of websites, from my understanding, there has never been one that has been more expensive. The last figure I heard back in the day was that it was $600 million and counting, and that's before they brought in the so-called geniuses to fix it. Just amazing. Well, Representative Jordan, we thank you so much for the work that you're doing to serve your constituents and to serve the American people. Godspeed on getting this thing fixed.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. Take care.
You too. Well, coming up next, we'll go to CPAC and get a live report from Evan Wilt of World Magazine at the Conservative Political Action Conference. That's coming up in our next segment. We'll be taking your calls also in the last segment of the broadcast. We'll give you that phone number after a while here. You can jot it down and get ready for that. This is Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins. You are listening to Washington Watch, and we appreciate it. Thanks for being along for the ride. Be back in a minute.
When governments authorize abortion, do abortions in that country decrease? Many argue that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as if rarity depends upon safety and legality. We now have nearly a century of evidence documenting what happens when governments authorize abortion. It does not become rare, but increases exponentially. Indeed, in less than 100 years, abortion has become the greatest Holocaust ever, far surpassing all wars and genocide combined. The Abortion Worldwide Report is the first to systematically track reported abortions in 100 nations, territories, and regions from the year of authorization through 2015. The principal authors of the Abortion Worldwide Report are William Robert Johnston and Thomas Jacobson, who compiled the data and information in the report over the last 32 and 14 years, respectively. Their research has revealed that over 1 billion babies have been aborted in 100 nations since 1920. Visit frc.org/university to view this policy discussion.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. When the Washington State Supreme Court ruled against a Christian florist whose faith prevented her from participating in a same-sex wedding, a warning shot was sent across the bow of the First Amendment. Christians are on the verge of losing our religious liberty. While we have a new president, activist judges and past policies are still wreaking havoc on religious freedom. That's why it's imperative that President Trump sign an executive order to help protect the first freedom guaranteed in the Constitution, the free exercise of religion. During his campaign, President Trump said, quoting, "The first priority of my administration will be to preserve and protect our religious liberty for the benefit of everyday Americans," unquote. Let's encourage President Trump to keep his promise. Call President Trump asking him to sign a religious freedom executive order. Call 202-456-1111. 202-456-1111. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
I would have come last year, but I was worried that I would be, at that time, too controversial. We wanted border security. We wanted very, very strong military. We wanted all of the things that we're going to get. And people consider that controversial, but you didn't consider it controversial. You know, the dishonest media, they'll say, he didn't get a standing ovation. You know why? No, you know why? Because everybody stood and nobody sat. So they will say, he never got a standing ovation, right? But I am only against the fake news media or press. Fake, fake. They have to lead that word. I'm against the people that make up stories and make up sources. And we will be substantially upgrading all of our military, offensive, defensive, everything. Take a look at what's happening in Germany. Take a look at what's happened in France. Take a look at Nice and Paris.
Well, that's President Trump addressing the annual CPAC. That's stands for Conservative Political Action Conference. He touted the power of the people. And as you can tell, he got a good reception. Probably didn't need to have a standing ovation because, as he said, they were probably already standing. Well, joining us now is Evan Wilt, political reporter for World Magazine. He's been covering the conference. He's been there. Evan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and happy Friday.
Well, thank you, and same to you. You know, I've seen some of the excerpts of speeches coming out of CPAC, and it sounds to me like that place is fired up. What do you think? You're there.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good way to describe it. I wrote for World Magazine, but it's kind of I describe it as a triumphant return to CPAC for Donald Trump. You know, it's amazing, you know, what winning kind of does to absolve people's worries or anxieties as, you know, Donald Trump won the election in November. A year ago, Donald Trump was not at CPAC. He decided not to attend. He had not had conservatives really coalesce around his campaign at that point. You know, Ted Cruz was still in the campaign, was still running. Marco Rubio was still running. And there was still a lot of division about what to think of Donald Trump and what to think about, you know, where the Republican Party was going. But, you know, this weekend we saw a very, very warm reception for Donald Trump. You know, I kind of carry, it's kind of like a rock star performance. He comes out and, you know, people are cheering and hoopering, you know, hollering for him. And just a really stark contrast from what we saw a year ago. He really has kind of moved into the center of, you know, the conservative movement now.
Well, tell our listeners, those who don't know that much about what CPAC is, maybe how long it's been around. What do they do? Who are they?
Yeah, so, you know, you mentioned it's the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's organized by the American Conservative Union. It originally started in 1973, and then, you know, now in 2017, there's about 100 organizations that are involved with it in some way. I kind of describe it as, you know, kind of a spring break for Republicans. It's really a time, you know, it's usually the end of February and beginning of March. It's like the weather starts getting warmer. People from all across the country, they come to D.C. and, you know, obviously they, you know, talk about conservative ideals. They talk about this, you know, the status of the, you know, the Republican Party and kind of what issues are concerning them at that time. Some of the highlights that usually take place, you know, especially during election years, they always have a presidential straw poll. So they'll kind of get a base of, you know, people that describe themselves as conservatives and kind of see who are they favoring at that point. Ted Cruz won it last year in 2016. I believe Rand Paul won it 2 years before that. So this year it was kind of much of the same. You know, a lot of people came kind of as a, you know, victory party now that Republicans have control of the White House and also both chambers of Congress. So, it's, you know, just the time for kind of like-minded people to come there and network and celebrate.
Well, you know, that yesterday, I believe it was Reince Priebus and Steve Bannon were in a presentation. They spoke together. And, you know, Bannon has been portrayed by the media as bad as Darth Vader. At least that seems to be the impression that you get. You were there. You heard that presentation. And did you have an opportunity maybe to talk with Bannon? Or if not, what was your impression of that speech with those two?
Yeah, well, I didn't have an opportunity to interview Steve Bannon or anything like that. But, you know, I was there in the crowd, and I got to hear he and Reince Priebus speak. And, you know, Steve Bannon, like you mentioned, he's kind of a mysterious figure. We haven't seen, you know, many speeches from him, you know, especially since the administration has, you know, rolled in. But, yeah, you know, he's portrayed a lot of different ways. He's not exactly the most, you know, polished and clean-cut individual. He doesn't usually dress well or, you know, those kinds of things. But, you know, he was very unapologetic with how he views the media and how he views, you know, mainstream publications as the opposition party to the Trump administration. Reince Priebus was a little bit more, you know, kind towards it. He was like, well, you know, we might have a better relationship going forward. But Steve Bannon basically said, you know, I don't expect to have a better relationship with the mainstream media going forward. And, you know, that's okay because they're opposed to the Trump agenda, and so far it hasn't stopped Trump from winning the election, and now he is opposed to the United States. So, I think it's definitely interesting to hear what he has to say.
Well, you know, harking back to the press conference a couple of Thursdays ago that President Trump did, now, again, that was portrayed by the media as he was unhinged and he was ranting and this. I watched the whole thing. And one of the things that he said to them at that time was, you know, look, I could be your best friend if you would just do honest stories and report the facts, even if you do a story that I don't like so much. As long as the facts are true, you know, you didn't hear too much about that. So maybe Bannon's right. There's not necessarily too much to hope for when it comes to the mainstream media changing their ways, I suspect. So that's probably accurate. It's unfortunate, but probably accurate. Well, very quickly, just the one last piece. There was something that Bannon said about deconstructing the administrative state. About 30 seconds, if you would. Tell me what that was about.
Yeah, you know, he kind of talked about kind of the overall landscape of where we're at right now. He talked about, you know, the lobbyists, the, you know, the big-time business corporations, the mainstream media. He talked about just the overall landscape of where we've been over the last 8 years or so. And he said Donald Trump is just ready to upend all of that. He talked about that, you know, people always say that Trump doesn't, you know, have much content in his speeches or we don't know where Donald Trump stands with things. But Bannon basically said, you know, if you want to know where Donald Trump stands on any issue, just listen to what he says, because he claimed there's a lot of content in what he says.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I think any kind of person can kind of see that Trump has an unconventional style, but he definitely has a way of delivering a message in his own unique way.
Well, thanks, Evan. We got to get out to the break. Evan Wilt, thanks again.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, many people on Wall Street, most of the left-leaning financial press is indicating that one of the things we've got to look at as we look at the new Trump administration is how well he is doing based on what the markets are doing. They're saying that job, wages, and markets are the three indicators as to how well a president is doing. I would agree with that. I would probably add a couple other things, but certainly I would agree with that. Of course, they're saying Donald Trump, we are looking at a market that is up roughly, on average, the S&P about 4.7% in the past 12 months. And so Trump doesn't really have any kind of record as to the market since it's going to be based on 12 months. They're saying he's got a long way to go to catch up with Bill Clinton, who saw the first 12 months at 17.4%, and President Obama, who saw 15.5%. So leaving Bill Clinton out of it for a second, the Obama administration did have a rise in the markets of 15.5%. The problem with that is 99.9% of it, as far as I'm concerned, was not based on any organic growth or any solid fundamentals of the economy. It was based on false positives that continued to be created for 8 years throughout the Obama administration. I certainly hope that people aren't going to be looking at the Obama administration market as a gauge to a presidency. I would rather see wages, GDP, and jobs as a gauge. Well, they would like that if we used jobs, because, of course, they talk about the 15 million jobs that President Obama's created. They never seem to talk about the 30 million jobs that went out of the back door of the economy. So, in fact, there were less people working at the end of his presidency than were at the beginning.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website. AFR.net.
Evan Fowler from Bot Radio Network here sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. Want to tell you about the website, TonyPerkins.com, and the Twitter handle, at T Perkins, if you want to follow Tony. And there have been some prior times when I've told you about the great daily newsletter, the email newsletter that comes out, and how much fun they are, just in terms of the titles. What, there was one that I saw today just sort of in passing, and this was an article from the FRC, Family Research Council, Daily Email Blast, and it was titled, "That's No Way to Tweet a Lady." And it was talking about, some of the negative Twitter stuff out there about the First Lady. So that just gives you a sample of how much fun those can be. Let me give you the phone number. It'll be a few minutes here before we start taking calls. We'll be taking calls after the next break. But that number, so you can jot it down, 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. You may want to talk with our next guest. She's going to stay over past the break into our last segment to take calls and to talk a little bit further. Well, here we go. Once upon a time, teen magazines featured stories about fashion, having a crush, movie reviews. You may be shocked to learn that in 2017 alone, Teen Vogue magazine has already promoted abortion to teens more than 60 times, 62 to be exact, unless they've written another article today, which would make it 63. Recently, Teen Vogue has attracted outrage with its article that attempts to be humorous, and it's not funny at all, but it's titled, "What to Get a Friend Post-Abortion." I'm not even, and I'll let our guests maybe give you a sense of the content of that article. It's just very, very sad. And our next guest is Jeannie Nigro of Jeannie Nigro Ministries and author of Unshaken, Standing Strong in Uncertain Time. Jeannie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Evan. It's great to be with you today.
Well, first of all, let me give you an opportunity to tell us what Jeannie Nigro Ministries is all about. What do you do?
Well, Jeannie Nigro Ministries is a teaching ministry, and so I speak all over the world and have a television program called Facets of the Stone and a radio program called Unshaken, and the book Unshaken focuses is helping people to stand strong in these times and growing in intimacy with God, just connecting with what's on his heart, with the Jewish roots of our faith, getting ready for Jesus' return in the end times. So it's really preparing us for his return and helping us to grow in intimacy with him. And how do we stand strong, and what do we do in these times that are just so turbulent?
Well, one of the things that we hope to do with this segment and the next segment is to give parents out there, particularly parents of teens, some practical advice. I'm hoping that you can do that a bit. And in terms of how to deal not only with the topic that we're discussing today, which is the garbage that Teen Vogue puts in their articles and how they're completely out of touch with what the reality of abortion is and how abortion can affect a young woman. So we're going to want to do that, get some practical advice from you about how to navigate these kinds of waters. But first of all, let me ask you what your thought is about this kind of attack on our nation's young people, and then we'll talk a little bit further about what parents might be able to do about it.
Yes, because, you know, Evan, I've experienced this personally myself. When I was 22, got my first apartment. That was back in the early 80s. I was in grad school. And, you know, Cosmopolitan magazine was my Bible back then. And I had it on my coffee table. And I thought, well, I have my own apartment now. And I'm an adult. And so what do I do? And I literally followed everything that they said to do. Similarly, I'm sure to how these girls do with Teen Vogue. Because you think, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm a teenager. And the problem is well, we don't see the spiritual battle behind it. But obviously the enemy is trying to steal our very souls, and we follow the messages of the world, and we don't see the repercussions. So for myself, I did everything it said to do. Well, it didn't tell you that the repercussions were the shame. I ended up with STDs, with horrible surgeries, almost wasn't able to have children, and just incredible physical implications, shame, emotional implications, and what we don't see is the spiritual, how all of this opens us up to the enemy. And his work in our lives, and that's ultimately he is the one behind all of this, trying to gain ground in the lives of our young women. And so I've personally experienced it. So when I came across this article, it just really pushed some buttons within me, because obviously it's even worse now than it was in the 80s. And so we really need to be praying about first seeing the spiritual battle behind it, and for eyes to be opened, and for this to be exposed, because it's just thought of as, well, this is the way it is now, and what we don't see, again, the repercussions of this, what happens as a result spiritually and what happens emotionally and physically to our girls.
Well, after the break, I'm going to ask you to get into that particular article that I mentioned a minute ago and you know, give our listeners a sense of the kinds of stuff that's being communicated to teens. But first, one of our colleagues today came back from lunch, and he said that on the corner of an intersection here in the Overland Park, Kansas City area, that there was a group of protesters who were standing out there dressed in pink with signs promoting Planned Parenthood. And the intersection that they were standing in or near was adjacent to a community college, a very big community college here on the Kansas side. And, you know, Planned Parenthood, it's connected to this because a lot of these articles that we're going to be talking about here after the break in Teen Vogue have to do with promoting the whole Planned Parenthood mindset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there it seems to me, don't you think, they're now sort of on the run fighting for their lives. You didn't see this kind of stuff before.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's just a spiritual battle. It's a violent force against truth and righteousness.
Let me give the phone number here, 866-372-7234. Get ready to dial that number after the break, and we'll have an opportunity to hear from Jeannie some more, and also you'll have an opportunity to ask questions. That's 866-372-7234. You're listening to the Washington Watch broadcast. Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back here in just a couple of minutes.
The first cries of a newborn baby signal the miracle of life. There are some who believe that life actually begins at that point, that whatever is in the womb is just tissue and could possibly even be an accident. But the Bible shows something quite different. In Psalm 139, it says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Life begins in the womb at the point of conception, and the Bible makes it clear that it's not just tissue, and there are no accidents with God. Life is a precious gift that's meant to be treasured, not destroyed. In fact, life is so valued by God that He sent His Son Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin so we could have life with Him for eternity. If life is that important to God, shouldn't we do all we can to protect it? For your help in defending the sanctity of human life, thank you from AFR.
Did you know there are 9,000 year-round volunteers serving with Operation Christmas Child nationwide? That's right, and local teams are still growing as God calls new volunteers to directly connect with His global purposes. As part of a local team, how would you like to invest your time, skills, and passions so that millions of children can receive a gift of love and a message of hope? To learn more about volunteer opportunities in your area or to apply, visit SamaritansPurse.org/volunteer with OCC.
American Family Association began in 1977 as the National Federation for Decency. Founded by Don Wildman, our mission is to inform, equip, and activate people like you to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church. American Family Association is one of the largest and most effective pro-family organizations in the country, and it's because of God's blessings and the generosity of people like you.
Hey, that's a pretty neat tractor you got there, kiddo. You know, someday you might find yourself driving a tractor. Of course, it might not seem as fun then.
With age comes wisdom and a firm grasp on the realities of life. If you hold appreciated stock or real estate, you may be concerned about the realities of capital gains tax when you sell your assets. Maybe you've recently sold appreciated property and you're looking for ways to offset your tax liability. Or maybe you're entering your retirement years and you're looking for ways to increase your income for the future. One way would be a charitable remainder trust. With it, you can make a gift of your property to charity, bypass capital gains tax, and make a charitable deduction at tax time. For advice on this, a charitable gift annuity, or several other financial options, contact the AFA Foundation. Our website is afafoundation.net. You can look us up on Facebook or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to the Friday edition of Washington Watch. Evan Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. And our guest is Jeannie Nigro. She's with Jeannie Nigro Ministries, and I'm guessing probably she founded it based on the name of it. Jeannie, thanks for sticking with us after the break.
Absolutely.
Well, let's get into this one article that I mentioned, and it was called What to Get a Friend Post-Abortion. This will give us a sense of the kind of stuff that Teen Vogue magazine is putting out to young people. And then let's start talking about some practical ways that we can address this as parents of teens.
Okay. Well, this article, it's just incredible that this could be out there. But again, it's the enemy's strategy to desensitize our women and desensitize us to that abortion is dealing with a life. It's really putting abortion... what came to my mind is maybe a friend is getting their wisdom teeth out or a friend has a bad cold. So it's what can you get a friend who's just had an abortion? You know, they just had their wisdom teeth out. Well, you can get them an angry uterus heating pad or a girl power baseball cap or even worse. Like I don't even want to say over the radio. And also encouraging them to accompany their friends, you know, to the abortion, to be a good friend and to use the post-period, high-waisted period panty. And it's just ridiculous, the things that they mention. But the whole point is just desensitizing the girls, the women, or the teens to think, well, you know, it's not so different from just going to a dentist appointment. It's kind of a nobody likes to go, you know. So how could I make light of it in these jokes? It's an F-uterus pin. It's just horrendous. So we've got to recognize that, and that, again, it's a spiritual battle, that the real enemy is Satan behind it, and so we can't fight with fleshly weapons. For us to just get upset about it and bash them and hate them and just talk about it doesn't do anything but give the enemy more ground. So we've got to use spiritual weapons of warfare and be, one, praying that the eyes would be open to this deception, that the eyes of the teens would be open, that we've got to be praying also for opportunities to use our media to get the truth out. As I said, even in my own life, the truth out of the repercussions, the consequences of these things, because we're just making light of it, but not seeing, again, the spiritual implications and the physical and the emotional that the girls are going through who are having the abortion. It's not a fun experience. There's consequences, obviously, in many degrees. So how can we use our media to share some of these stories, to get actually some testimonials out there, to educate that there are consequences to this. This is not just going to the dentist. This is not just a getting a wisdom tooth pulled kind of a thing. So we've got, I said the first thing is we've got to recognize what are the spiritual weapons that we can use, and how can we educate teens, and how can we be praying and praying for these doors and these opportunities to use media in a way that will bring truth and not just desensitization away from the truth.
Well, let's say we probably have a mom or a dad listening who maybe their teen either has read or has a subscription to Teen Vogue, and or it could be some other magazine, similar magazine. Let's talk about how mom or dad can appropriately approach their teen daughter in this case, and help them understand why these kinds of things are not really good in a way mm-hmm. that keeps lines of communication open, which is so important. What do you have to say about that?
Right. And again, I can only speak from my own experiences. I didn't become a believer until I was 28, and so I went through all of those teen years and 20s following the messages of the world. And to me, Evan, the most effective thing, and I do this with my own daughter, who's a teen, is ask them questions. What do you think about this? Or what do you think, what are some of the repercussions do you think? Or do you know anyone that's been through this? And how do they feel? Or just asking questions to get them to think. Well, first of all, pray. Obviously, to pray that for God to open up an opportunity to even speak about this, because if we just kind of charge in there without prayer, we don't want to do that. So we got to pray for God to open up the right opportunity for their hearts to be open. Again, it's a spiritual battle, and so the enemy is trying to kill, steal, and destroy our teens. And so we've got to recognize, hey, first I've got to pray. I can't just approach my daughter, at any time. And that their hearts would be open, and that the Lord would be speaking to them. But to ask them questions and to talk through it, and to share my story, to share stories of people who have experienced the negative consequences of these things. And what do you think? Often with my daughter, I'll say, what do you think the message, the world's trying to get across here? What do you think is the hidden message that's trying to come across? And so I think it's really most effective to get to them to think, to ask the questions, to ask the right questions, because if we're just kind of preaching at them, then it becomes, this is, mom's preaching at me and I'm going to shut off or shut down. It's more likely, depending on the relationship, obviously, but
yeah.
I think it's just more effective to ask questions and to get them to think, and then to share if you know of people, or ask God to even open, to bring people into your life that you could share. And before you know it, you'll be meeting people who have, all of a sudden will be sharing these things, that then you can share their story with your daughter.
That's right. Well, Jenny, how would you like to talk with some listeners here?
I would love to. Thank you, Evan. Thanks for the
All right. Well, we've got pretty much a full board of calls here. The phone number is 866-372-7234. Charles is on the line from Missouri. Charles, thanks for calling Washington Watch today.
Hi. I think you and everyone that's on the station that help Christians and help get, you kind of know what I'm saying, just help fight for our rights and help for life and everything. But my question is, how do we show Jesus' love and grace, saying that we forgive you, but we're against this, but we love you, but this has been genocide against the United States for several years, and how can we show love and compassion like Jesus during this, and put it on social media? That's not going to be, anything that we say as Christians are going to be offensive, because it's biblical and we are true mm-hmm. Christians.
That's right. Charles, what do you think? What do you say to that, Jeannie?
Well, absolutely. And I've experienced that, Charles, myself on social media when I've posted things that I didn't even think were well, that weren't offensive at all, you know, that some of the groups, just because it's Christian. And one is, again, because it's a spiritual battle, is to pray, God, give me your heart for these people. Because God, obviously, his heart is for them to know the truth, to be saved. He has love for them, even when we don't, you know. So first I ask him that you would give me your heart for them, because our fleshly, you know, just wants to retaliate, you know, or get angry, and that doesn't do any good in the heavenly realms. And so we pray for God's heart for them, and to recognize that, again, they are not the enemy. It's the enemy working through this situation. So we need to speak the truth. I mean, we need to speak, fight for righteousness, and we need to, you know, be writing the editors of the magazines, and, you know, we need to be having a voice, because I think that that's where we've gotten to this point, because we didn't have a voice, or we didn't use our voice, rather. Because we have a better opportunity now to use our voice, and so we need to do that. But we need to attack the enemy. You know, we need to attack the lie versus the person. And so for me, attacking the lie would be, let's look at the negative consequences of this. You know, let's look at some of the pain. Let's look at some of the stories, you know, of the pain that has come across, and let's highlight that, because that's the whole lie, is that there's no negative repercussions, and not spiritually, not emotionally. It's just like, you know, going to the, getting a checkup, getting my teeth cleaned. There's no negative consequences, kind of thing. And so that's the lie that we need to attack versus the people themselves.
That's right. Well, Fred is listening in Indiana. Fred, thank you for calling Washington Watch.
Yes. I want to state that I am not pro-abortion, okay? I want you to understand that. But I think there needs to be some provisions for my daughter was going to have a baby. The first thing the baby did was form the intestines outside of the body, and she hung on. And when she went back, the liver and the stomach was outside of the body. The child had no anus, so it was filling up with its own waste. There was a very good possibility that the child would actually burst inside of her and cause her all kinds of blood infections, maybe even kill her. And when she wanted to get a medical procedure, it had gone past whatever the time is in that state for an abortion. And so they sent her to Detroit, and they punctured her uterus. She started bleeding out. They had to put her in an ambulance and send her to a hospital. Now, I am all for laws against abortion as a form of birth control. But I don't understand why she had to go through that, and it couldn't be done in a hospital under proper medical supervision.
Do you want to comment on that?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I'm so sorry that your daughter went through that. I mean, it sounds absolutely horrific on every level, physical, emotional. I can't even imagine. So I'm just so sorry that she has experienced that. And it's a very complicated issue, you know, and I think that, you know, what we're speaking about now in terms of this Teen Vogue and everything is not those types of cases, obviously. But, I mean, what we're talking about is desensitizing our culture or our young women who have been fed this lie that having abortion is no different than, I don't know, going to buy a pack of gum. You know, it just absolutely has no weight at all in terms of that it's life or that there's consequences or anything. And so I think that's what we're really emphasizing here, is just how do we break through that lie, you know. And as far as, you know, these extreme cases, like your daughter's, or how that gets tied up in the legal system, I mean, it's so complicated, and I honestly am not, you know, I don't have the legal background to appropriately comment on it. But other than to say, in general, that I think that you are agreeing, obviously, that abortion is not something that is taken lightly. You know, it's not something that should be just part of our culture in 2017 as part of daily life. You know, it's like everything else that how the enemy works is this desensitization process. You know, things on television that are on there now, you'd never see that on it 20 years ago. Well, because it just starts a little bit at a time, a slow drip. And I see these articles, like with Teen Vogue and so forth, as like a slow drip. Well, maybe not so slow, but as, you know, just one drip. And before you know it, abortion is no big deal. Well, you know, 20 years ago, how that you can imagine that. And so we need to be aware when we see, Lord, give us eyes to see the unseen. To help us to see these, you know, these slow drips that are coming so we can stop, stand in the gap, stand in the way and say, wait, no more drips. We're standing against this and not wait until it's so far gone that that we get into these complex legal situations.
Well, Fred, you know, thank you so much for calling. And in your case, you know, I'm not a doctor, Jeannie's not a doctor, but that one sounds like one of those situations where, you know, it sounds like it was heading toward a life of the mother situation. And
absolutely.
I think, yeah. So, Fred, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it. And, you know, and hope your daughter's doing well. Well, let's take a call from Phil. Phil is in Kansas. And Phil, how are you doing? Thanks for calling Washington Watch today.
Real good. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for bringing this this subject to the fore. My first grandchild was aborted, and it affected a lot of lives. It ended in my marriage because my wife didn't agree that we should adopt a baby, and that was another story. But my son mm-hmm. was affected by it. He was too young to take on responsibility at the time. I guess he could have, but they were both young, and so the decision was really made, you know, with the parents, I guess, and I guess I'll have to take part of the responsibility. But there's that's still over 25 years ago, and there's not a day goes by that I don't think about that.
Wow, Phil, that's difficult, and we're sorry to hear about that. You know, folks out there, just take a moment, jot Phil's name down, and think to pray for him and for his family, because the pain. And Phil, thank you so much for calling today. You know, Phil represents a tremendous amount of pain out there that mm-hmm. Connects with abortion and the consequences of abortion. You know, we just heard from Fred an entirely different situation there. So, Jeannie, what are your thoughts about what Phil just shared with us?
Yeah, just the pain. And again, this is so much pain that permeates generations. As he said, his marriage, the sons, you know, the grandchild. And that's what just kept coming through my mind and heart as he was sharing, was the lies of the enemy. You know, that we need to pray that these lies would be exposed. Because, again, the lie is that there is no pain. You know, the lie is that there are no repercussions, that it's no big deal, and yet that's what I think we need to pray for, more opportunities to open up for God, to open up doors, and through these types of, you know, the radio and through media, that we are exposed to the lies, that first the believers even are, you know, exposed to the lies, that we have eyes to see the unseen, the spiritual battle, and that we can use media and use our voices to expose these lies and to share these painful testimonies, really, you know, that.
Thank you. Jeannie, we're just about out of time. Thanks so much, Jeannie Nigro with Jeannie Nigro Ministries. You've been listening to Washington Watch. This is Eben Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Thanks for listening.
Or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.